Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson. For Beth Sanderson, who's been reading fantasy for longer than I've been alive, and fully deserves to have a grandson as loony as she is. Once finished bathing, she returned to her room, dressed in something practical, and made her way downstairs. Apprentices bustled in the workroom and housekeepers worked upstairs, but the kitchen was quiet. Clubs, Dachshund, Ham, and Breeze sat at the morning meal. They looked up as Vin entered. "What?" Vin asked grumpily, pausing in the doorway. The bath had soothed her headache somewhat, but it still pulsed slightly in the back of her head. The four men exchanged glances. Ham spoke first. "We were just discussing the status of the plan, now that both our employer and our army are gone." Breeze raised an eyebrow. "Status? That's an interesting way of putting it, Hammond. I would have said unfeasibility instead." Clubs grunted his assent, and the four turned to her, apparently waiting to see her reaction. "Why do they care so much what I think?" she thought, walking into the room and taking a chair. "You want something to eat?" Dachshund said, rising. "Clubs' housekeepers fixed some bay wraps for us to—" "Ale," Vin said. Dachshund paused. "It's not even noon." "Ale. Now. Please." She leaned forward, folding her arms on the table and resting her head on them. Ham had the nerve to chuckle.
"Pewter drag?"
Vin nodded.
"It'll pass," he said.
"If I don't die first," Vin grumbled. Ham chuckled again, but the levity seemed forced. Dox handed her a mug, then sat, glancing at the others.
"So, Vin, what do you think?"
"I don't know," she said with a sigh. "The army was pretty much the center of everything, right? Breeze, Ham, and Yeadon spent all their time recruiting. Dachshund and Renu worked on supplies. Now that the soldiers are gone, well, that only leaves Marsh's work with the Ministry and Cal's attacks on the nobility, and neither are things he needs us for. The crew is redundant." The room fell silent.
"She has a depressingly blunt way of putting it," Dachshund said.
"Pewter drag will do that to you," Ham noted.
"When did you get back, anyway?" Vin asked.
"Last night, after you were asleep," Ham said. "The garrison sent us part-time soldiers back early so they wouldn't have to pay us."
"They're still out there, then?" Dachshund asked. Ham nodded.
"Hunting down the rest of our army. The Lúthadel garrison relieved the Beltru troops, who were actually pretty beat up from the fighting. The majority of the Lúthadel troops should be out for a long while yet, searching for rebels. Apparently several very large groups broke off of our main army and fled before the battle started."
The conversation lulled into another period of silence. Vin sipped at her ale, drinking it more out of spite than any belief that it would make her feel better. A few minutes later, footsteps sounded on the stairs. Kelsier swept into the kitchen.
"Good morning, all," he said with customary cheerfulness. "Bay wraps again, I see. Clubs, you really need to hire more imaginative housemaids."
Despite the comment, he grabbed a cylindrical bay wrap and took a large bite, then smiled pleasantly as he poured himself something to drink. The crew remained quiet. The men exchanged glances. Kelsier remained standing, leaning back against the cupboard as he ate.
"Kel, we need to talk," Dachshund finally said. "The army is gone."
"Yes," Kelsier said between bites. "I noticed."
"The job is dead, Kelsier," Breeze said. "It was a good try, but we failed."
Kelsier paused. He frowned, lowering his bay wrap.
"Failed? What makes you say that?"
"The army is gone, Kel," Ham said.
"The army was only one piece of our plans. We've had a setback, true, but we're hardly finished."
"Oh, for the Lord's sake, man," Breeze said. "How can you stand there so cheerfully? Our men are dead. Don't you even care?"
"I care, Breeze," Kelsier said in a solemn voice. "But what is done is done. We need to move on."
"Exactly," Breeze said. move on from this insane job of yours. It's time to quit. I know you don't like that, but it's the simple truth.
Kelsier set his plate on the counter.
Don't soothe me, Breeze. Never soothe me.
Breeze paused, mouth open slightly.
Fine, he finally said. I won't use allomancy. I'll just use truth. Do you know what I think? I think you never intended to grab that atium. You've been using us. You promised us wealth, so we'd join you. But you never had any intention of making us rich. This is all about your ego. It's about becoming the most famous crew leader that ever lived. That's why you're spreading all these rumors, doing all this recruitment. You've known wealth. Now you want to become a legend.
Breeze fell quiet, eyes hard. Kelsier stood with his arms folded, regarding the crew. Several glanced aside, shamed eyes proving that they had considered what Breeze was saying. Vin was one of those. The silence persisted, all of them waiting for a rebuttal. Footsteps sounded on the stairs again, and Spook burst into the kitchen.
"Willing the Cairn up into sea! A gathering in the Fountain Square!"
Kelsier didn't look surprised by the boy's announcement.
"A gathering in the Fountain Square," Ham said slowly. "That means..."
"Come on," Kelsier said, standing up straight. "We're going to watch."
"I'd rather not do this, Kel," Ham said. "I avoid these things for a reason."
Kelsier ignored him. He walked at the head of the crew, who all, even Breeze, wore mundane scar clothing and cloaks. A light ashfall had begun, and careless flakes floated down from the sky like leaves dropped from some unseen tree. Large clusters of ska clogged the street, most of them workers from factories or mills. Finn knew of only one reason why the workers would be released and sent to gather in the city's central square. Executions. She'd never gone to them before. Supposedly, all the men in the city, ska or noble, were required to attend execution ceremonies, but thieving crews knew how to remain hidden. Bells rang in the distance, announcing the event, and obligators watched at the sides of the streets. They would go into mills, forges, and random houses, searching for those who disobeyed the call, meting out death as a punishment. Gathering this many people was an enormous undertaking, but, in a way, doing things like this simply worked to prove how powerful the Lord Ruler was. The streets grew even more crowded as Vin's crew approached the Fountain Square. Building roofs were packed, and people filled the streets, pressing forward.
There's no way they'll all fit.
Luthadel wasn't like most other cities. Its population was enormous. Even with only the men in attendance, there was no way everyone would have a view of the executions. Yet they came anyway. Partially because they were required, partially because they wouldn't have to work while they watched, and partially, Vin suspected, because they had the same morbid curiosity that all men possessed. As the crowds grew thicker, Kelsier, Doxson, and Ham began to shove the crowd a path through the onlookers. Some of the ska gave the crew looks of resentment, though many were just dull-eyed and compliant. Some appeared surprised, even excited, when they saw Kelsier, though his scars were not showing. These people moved aside eagerly. Eventually, the crew reached the outer row of buildings surrounding the square. Kelsier picked one, nodding toward it, and Doxson moved forward. A man at the doorway tried to bar his entrance, but Dox pointed toward the roof, then hefted his coin pouch suggestively. A few minutes later, the crew had the entire rooftop to themselves.
"Smoke us, please, Clubs," Kelsier said quietly.
The gnarled craftsman nodded, making the crew invisible to allomantic bronze senses. Vin walked over and crouched beside the roof slip, hands on the short stone railing as she scanned the square down below.
"So many people."
"You've lived in cities all your life, Vin," Ham said, standing next to her. "Surely you've seen crowds before."
"Yes, but..."
How could she explain? The shifting, overpacked mass was unlike anything she'd seen. It was expansive, almost endless, its trails filling every street leading away from the central square. The ska were packed so closely, she wondered how they even had room to breathe. The noblemen were at the center of the square, separated from the ska by soldiers. They were close to the central fountain patio, which stood about 5 feet above the rest of the square. Someone had constructed seating for the nobility, and they lounged as if they were visiting some show or horse race. Many had servants holding up parasols against the ash, but it was falling lightly enough that some just ignored it. Standing beside the noblemen were the obligators, regular ones in gray, inquisitors in black. Vin shivered. There were 8 inquisitors, their lanky forms standing ahead above the obligators. But it wasn't just height that separated the dark creatures from their cousins. There was an air, a distinctive posture about the steel inquisitors. Vin turned, studying the regular obligators instead. Most of them held themselves proudly in their administrative robes. The higher their position, the finer the robes. Vin squinted, burning tin, and recognized a moderately familiar face.
"There," she said, pointing. "That one's my father."
Kelsier perked up.
"Where?"
"At the front of the obligators," Vin said. "The shorter one with the golden robe scarf."
Kelsier fell silent.
"That's your father?" he finally asked.
"Who?"
Doxson asked, squinting.
"I can't make out their faces."
"Tavidian,"
Kelsier said.
"The Lord Predon?"
Doxson asked with shock.
"What?" Vin asked. "Who's that?"
Breeze chuckled.
"The Lord Predon is the leader of the ministry, my dear. He's the most important of the Lord Ruler's obligators. Technically, he's even higher ranked than the Inquisitors."
Vin sat dumbfounded.
"The Lord Predon," Doxson mumbled, shaking his head. "This just keeps getting better."
"Look,"
Spook said suddenly, pointing. The crowd of ska began to shuffle. Vin had assumed that they were too packed to move, but apparently she was wrong. The people began to pull back, making a large corridor leading to the central platform.
"What could make them?"
Then she felt it. The oppressive numbness, like a massive blanket pressing down, choking away her air, stealing her will. She immediately burned copper. Yet like before, she swore that she could feel the Lord Ruler's soothing despite the metal. She sensed him coming closer, trying to make her lose all will, all desire, all strength of emotion.
"He's coming,"
Spook whispered, crouching down beside her. A black carriage, drawn by a pair of massive white stallions, appeared down a side street. It rolled down the corridor of ska, moving with a sense of inevitability. Vin saw several people get clipped by its passing and suspected that if a man were to fall in the carriage's path, the vehicle wouldn't even slow as it crushed him to death. The ska sagged a bit more as the Lord Ruler arrived, a visible ripple washing across the crowd, their postures drooping as they felt his powerful soothing. The background roar of whispers and chatting dampened, an unreal silence falling over the enormous square.
"He's so powerful," Breeze said. "Even at my best, I can only soothe a couple hundred men. There have to be tens of thousands of people here."
Spook looked over the rim of the rooftop.
"It makes me want to fall, to just let go."
Then he paused. He shook his head as if waking up. Vin frowned. Something felt different. Tentatively, she extinguished her copper and realized that she could no longer feel the Lord Ruler's soothing. The feeling of awful depression, of soullessness and emptiness, had strangely disappeared. Spook looked up, and the rest of the crew members stood just a little straighter. Vin glanced around. The ska below looked unchanged, yet her friends... Her eyes found Kelsier. The crew leader stood straight-backed, staring resolutely at the approaching carriage, a look of concentration on his face.
"He's riding our emotions," Vin realized.
"He's counteracting the Lord Ruler's power."
It was obviously a struggle for Kelsier to protect even their small group.
"Breeze is right," Vin thought. "How can we fight something like this? The Lord Ruler is soothing 100,000 people at once."
But Kelsier fought on. Just in case, Vin turned on her copper. Then she burned zinc and reached out to help Kelsier, riding the emotions of those around her. It felt like she was pulling against some massive, immobile wall. Yet it must have helped, for Kelsia relaxed slightly, shooting her a grateful look.
"Look,"
Doxson said, probably unaware of the unseen battle that occurred around him.
"The prisoner carts."
He pointed toward a set of 10 large, bar-lined carts traveling down the corridor behind the Lord Ruler.
"Do you recognize anyone in them?" Ham said, leaning forward.
"I'm not of the seeing,"
Spook said, looking uncomfortable.
"Uncle, you really the burn, right?"
"Yes, my copper is on," Club said testily. "You're safe. We're far enough away from the Lord Ruler that it wouldn't matter anyway. That plaza is enormous."
Spook nodded, then obviously began burning tin. A moment later, he shook his head.
"Nodding of the recognizing anyone?"
"You weren't there for a lot of the recruiting, though, Spook," Ham said, squinting.
"True,"
Spook replied. Though his accent remained, he was obviously making an effort to speak normally. Kelsier stepped up to the ledge, holding a hand up to shade his eyes.
"I can see the prisoners. No, I don't recognize any of the faces. They aren't captive soldiers."
"Who then?"
Ham asked.
"Mostly women and children, it appears," Kelsier said.
"The families of the soldiers?"
Ham asked, horrified. Kelsier shook his head.
"I doubt it. They wouldn't have taken the time to identify dead Ska."
Ham frowned, looking confused.
"Random people, Hammond," Breeze said with a quiet sigh. "Examples. Casual executions made in order to punish the Ska for harboring rebels."
"No, not even that," Kelsier said. "I doubt the Lord Ruler even knows or cares that most of those men were recruited from Luthadel. He probably just assumes that it was another countryside rebellion. This is just a way of reminding everyone who is in control."
The Lord Ruler's carriage rolled up a platform onto the central patio. The ominous vehicle pulled to a stop in the exact center of the square, but the Lord Ruler himself remained inside. The prisoner carts pulled to a stop, and a group of obligators and soldiers began to unload them. Black ash continued to fall as the first group of prisoners, most struggling only weakly, were dragged up onto the raised central platform. An inquisitor directed the work, gesturing for prisoners to be gathered beside each of the platform's 4 bowl-like fountains. 4 prisoners were forced to their knees, one beside each running fountain, and 4 inquisitors raised obsidian axes. 4 axes fell, and 4 heads were sheared free. The bodies, still held by soldiers, were allowed to spurt their last lifeblood into the fountain basins. The fountains began to glisten red as they sprayed into the air. The soldiers tossed the bodies aside, then brought 4 more people forward. Spook looked away sickly.
Why doesn't Kelsier do something? To saving them, I mean.
Don't be foolish, Vin said. There are 8 Inquisitors down there, not to mention the Lord Ruler himself. Kelsier would be an idiot to try something.
Though I wouldn't be surprised if he considered it, she thought, remembering when Kelsier had been ready to rush down and take on an entire army by himself. She glanced to the side. Kelsier looked like he was forcibly holding himself back, white-knuckled hands gripping the chimney beside him to keep himself from rushing down to stop the executions. Spook stumbled over to another part of the rooftop where he could retch without spilling bile onto the people below. Ham groaned slightly, and even Clubs looked saddened. Doxson watched solemnly as if witnessing the deaths were some sort of vigil. Breeze just shook his head. Kelsier was angry. His face red, his muscles tense, his eyes ablaze. 4 more deaths, one of them a child.
This, Kelsier said, angrily waving his hand toward the central square. This is our enemy. There is no quarter here, no walking away. This is no simple job to be thrown aside when we encounter a few unexpected twists.
4 more deaths.
Look at them, Kelsier demanded, pointing at the bleachers full of nobility.
Most of them appeared bored, and a few even seemed to be enjoying themselves, turning and joking with one another as the beheadings continued. I know you question me, Kelsier said, turning to the crew. You think that I've been too hard in the nobility, think that I relish killing them too much. But can you honestly see those men laughing and tell me that they don't deserve to die by my blade? I only bring them justice. Four more deaths. Vin searched the bleachers with urgent, tin-enhanced eyes. She found Elland sitting amid a group of younger men. None of them were laughing, and they weren't the only ones. True, many of the nobility made light of the experience, but there were some small minority who looked horrified. Kelsier continued. Breeze, you asked about the Atium. I'll be honest. It was never my main goal. I gathered this crew because I wanted to change things. We'll grab the Atium. We'll need it to support a new government. But this job isn't about making me or any of you wealthy. Yeadon is dead. He was our excuse. A way that we could do something good while still pretending to be just thieves. Now that he's gone, you can give up if you want. Quit. But that won't change anything. The struggle will go on. Men will still die. You'll just be ignoring it. Four more deaths. It's time to stop the charade, Kelsier said, staring at each of them in turn. If we're going to do this now, we have to be upfront and honest with ourselves. We have to admit that this isn't about money. It's about stopping that. He pointed at the courtyard with its red fountains, a visible sign of death for the thousands of Ska too far away to even tell what was happening. I intend to continue my fight, Kelsier said quietly. I realize that some of you question my leadership. You think I've been building myself up too much with the Ska. You whisper that I'm making myself into another Lord Ruler. You think that my ego is more important to me than overthrowing the Empire. He paused, and Vin saw guilt in the eyes of Doxin and the others. Spook rejoined the group, still looking a bit sick. Four more deaths. You're wrong, Kelsier said quietly. You have to trust me. You gave me your confidence when we began this plan, despite how dangerous things seemed. I still need that confidence. No matter how things appear, no matter how terrible the odds, we have to keep fighting. Four more deaths. The crew slowly turned toward Kelsier. Resisting the Lord Ruler's pushing on their emotions didn't seem like half as much a struggle for Kelsier anymore, though Vin had let her zinc lapse.
Maybe. Maybe he can do it, Vin thought, despite herself.
If there was ever a man who could defeat the Lord Ruler, it would be Kelsier.
I didn't choose you men because of your competence, Kelsier said, though you are certainly skilled. I chose each of you specifically because I knew you to be men of conscience. Ham, Breeze, Docks, Clubs, you are men with reputations for honesty, even charity. I knew that if I were going to succeed at this plan, I would need men who actually cared. No, Breeze, this isn't about boxings or about glory. This is about war. A war we have been fighting for 1,000 years. A war I intend to end. You may go if you wish. You know I'll let any of you out. No questions asked, no repercussions exacted. If you wish to go. However, he said, eyes growing hard, if you stay, you have to promise to stop questioning my authority. You can voice concerns about the job itself, but there will be no more whispered conferences about my leadership. If you stay, you follow me. Understood? One by one, he locked eyes with the crew members. Each one gave him a nod.
I don't think we ever really questioned Jaquel, Doxin said. We're worried. And I think rightly so. The army was a big part of our plans.
Kelsier nodded to the north, toward the main city gates.
What do you see up in the distance, Docs?
The city gates?
And what is different about them recently?
Doxin shrugged.
Nothing unusual. They're a bit understaffed, but...
Why? Kelsier interjected. Why are they understaffed?
Doxin paused.
Because the garrison is gone?
Exactly, Kelsier said.
Ham says that the garrison could be out chasing remnants of our army for months, and only about 10% of its men stayed behind. That makes sense. Stopping rebels is the sort of thing the garrison was created to do. Luthadel might be exposed, but no one ever attacks Luthadel. No one ever has.
A quiet understanding passed between the members of the crew.
Part one of our plan to take the city has been accomplished, Kelsier said. We got the garrison out of Luthadel. It cost us far more than we expected, far more than it should have. I wish to the forgotten gods that those boys hadn't died. Unfortunately, we can't change that now. We can only use the opening they gave us. The plan is still in motion. The main peacekeeping force in the city is gone. If a house war starts in earnest, the Lord Ruler will have a difficult time stopping it. Assuming he wants to. For some reason, he tends to step back and let the nobility fight each other every 100 years or so. Perhaps he finds that letting them at each other's throats keeps them away from his own.
But what if the garrison comes back? Ham asked.
If I'm right, Kelsier said, the Lord Ruler will let them chase stragglers from our army for several months, giving the nobility a chance to blow off a little steam. Except he's going to get a lot more than he expected. When that house war starts, we're going to use the chaos to seize the palace.
With what army, my dear man? Breeze said.
We still have some troops left, Kelsier said. Plus we have time to recruit more. We'll have to be careful. We can't use the cave, so we'll have to hide our troops in the city. That will probably mean smaller numbers. However, that won't be an issue. You see, that garrison is going to return eventually.
The members of the group shared a look as the executions proceeded below. Vin sat quietly, trying to decide what Kelsier meant by that statement.
"Exactly, Kel," Ham said slowly. "The garrison will return and we won't have a big enough army to fight them."
"But we will have the Lord Ruler's treasury," Kelsier said, smiling. "What is it you always say about those garrisoners, Ham?"
The thug paused, then smiled too.
"That they're mercenaries."
"We seize the Lord Ruler's money," Kelsier said, "and it means we get his army, too." This can still work, gentlemen. We can make it work.
The crew seemed to grow more confident. Vin, however, turned her eyes back toward the square. The fountains ran so red that they seemed completely filled with blood. Over it all, the Lord Ruler watched from within his jet-black carriage. The windows were open, and, with tin, Vin could just barely see a silhouetted figure sitting within.
"That's our real foe," she thought. "Not the missing garrison, not the Inquisitors with their axes. That man, the one from the logbook. We'll have to find a way to defeat him. Otherwise, everything else we do will be pointless."
"I think I've finally discovered why Rashik resents me so much. He does not believe that an outsider such as myself, a foreigner, could possibly be the hero of ages. He believes that I have somehow tricked the philosophers, that I wear the piercings of the hero unjustly. According to Rashik, only a Terrasman of pure blood should have been chosen as the hero. Oddly, I find myself even more determined because of his hatred. I must prove to him that I can perform this task."
27. It was a subdued group that returned to Clubs's shop that evening. The executions had stretched for hours. There had been no denunciations, no explanations by the Ministry or the Lord Ruler, just execution after execution after execution. Once the captives were gone, the Lord Ruler and his obligators had ridden away, leaving a pile of corpses on the platform and bloodied water running in the fountains. As Kelsier's crew returned to the kitchen, Vin realized that her headache no longer bothered her. Her pain now seemed insignificant. The bay wraps remained on the table, thoughtfully covered by one of the housemaids. No one reached for them.
"All right," Kelsier said, taking his customary place, leaning against the cupboard. "Let's plan this out. How should we proceed?"
Doxson recovered a stack of papers from the side of the room as he walked over to seat himself.
With the garrison gone, our main focus becomes the nobility.
Indeed, Breeze said. If we truly intend to seize the treasury with only a few thousand soldiers, then we're certainly going to need something to distract the palace guard and keep the nobility from taking the city away from us. The house war, therefore, becomes of paramount importance.
Kelsier nodded. My thoughts exactly.
But what happens when the house war is over? Vin said.
Some houses will come out on top, and then we'll have to deal with them.
Kelsier shook his head. I don't intend for the house war to ever end, Vin. Or at least not for a long while. The Lord Ruler makes dictates, and the Ministry polices his followers, but the nobility are the ones who actually force the Sky to work. So if we bring down enough noble houses, the government may just collapse on its own. We can't fight the entire Final Empire as a whole. It's too big. But we might be able to shatter it, then make the pieces fight each other.
We need to put financial strain on the great houses, Doxson said, flipping through his papers. The aristocracy is primarily a financial institution, and lack of funds will bring any house down.
Breeze, we might need to use some of your aliases, Kelsier said. So far, I have really been the only one in the crew working on the house war. But if we're going to make this city snap before the garrison returns, we'll need to step up our efforts.
Breeze sighed.
Very well. We'll just have to be very careful to make certain no one accidentally recognizes me as someone I shouldn't be. I can't go to parties or functions, but I can probably do solitary house visits.
Same for you, Dox, Kelsier said.
I figured as much, Doxson said.
It will be dangerous for both of you, Kelsier said, but speed will be essential. Vin will remain our main spy, and we'll probably want her to start spreading some bad information. Anything to make the nobility uncertain.
Ham nodded.
We should probably focus our attentions on the top, then.
Indeed, Breeze said. If we can make the most powerful houses look vulnerable, then their enemies will be quick to strike. Only after the powerful houses are gone will people realize that they were the ones really supporting the economy.
The room fell quiet for a second, then several heads turned toward Vin.
What?
She asked.
They're talking about House Venture, Vin, Doxson said. It's the most powerful of the great houses.
Breeze nodded.
If Venture falls, the entire Final Empire would feel the tremors.
Vin sat quietly for a moment.
They're not all bad people, she finally said.
Perhaps, Kelsier said. But Lord Straff Venture certainly is, and his family sits at the very head of the Final Empire. House Venture needs to go, and you already have an in with one of its most important members.
I thought you wanted me to stay away from Elland, she thought with annoyance.
Just keep your ears open, child, Breeze said. See if you can get the lad to talk about his house's finances. Find us a bit of leverage and we'll do the rest.
Just like the games Elland hates so much.
However, the executions were still fresh in her mind. That sort of thing had to be stopped. Besides, even Elland said he didn't like his father or his house very much. Maybe she could find something. I'll see what I can do, she said.
A knock came at the front door, answered by one of the apprentices. A few moments later, Sazed, clad in a ska cloak to hide his features, entered the kitchen. Kelsier checked the clock.
You're early, Saze.
I try to make it a habit, Master Kelsier, the terraceman replied.
Doxson raised an eyebrow.
That's a habit someone else could afford to pick up.
Kelsier snorted.
If you're always on time, it implies that you never have anything better you should be doing. Saze, how are the men?
As good as can be expected, Master Kelsier, Saze replied. But they can't hide in the Renew warehouses forever.
I know, Kelsier said.
Docs, Ham, I'll need you to work on this problem. There are 2,000 men left from our army. I want you to get them into Luthadel.
Doxson nodded thoughtfully.
We'll find a way.
You want us to keep training them? Ham asked. Kelsier nodded. Then we'll have to hide them in squads, he said. We don't have the resources to train men individually. Say, a couple hundred men per team?
hidden in slums near one another?
Make sure none of the teams know about the others, Doxson said. Or even that we still intend to strike at the palace. With that many men in town, there's a chance some of them will eventually get taken by the obligators for one reason or another.
Kelsier nodded.
Tell each group that it's the only one that didn't get disbanded, and that it's being retained just in case it's needed at some point in the future.
You also said that recruitment needed to be continued, Ham said.
Kelsier nodded.
I'd like at least twice as many troops before we try and pull this off.
That's going to be tough, Ham said, considering our army's failure.
What failure? Kelsier said.
Tell them the truth, that our army successfully neutralized the garrison.
Though most of them died doing it, Ham said.
We can gloss over that part, Breeze said. The people will be angry at the executions. That should make them more willing to listen to us.
Gathering more troops is going to be your main task over the next few months, Ham, Kelsier said.
That's not much time, Ham said. But I'll see what I can do.
Good, Kelsier said. Says, did the note come?
It did, Master Kelsier, Says had said,
pulling a letter from beneath his cloak and handing it to Kelsier.
And that would be?
Breeze asked curiously.
A message from Marsh, Kelsier said, opening the letter and scanning its contents.
He's in the city and he has news.
What news?
Ham asked.
He doesn't say, Kelsier said, grabbing a bay wrap.
But he gave instructions on where to meet him tonight.
He walked over, picking up a regular ska cloak.
I'm going to go scout the location before it gets dark.
Coming, Vin?
She nodded, standing.
The rest of you keep working on the plan, Kelsier said. In 2 months' time, I want this city to be so tense that when it finally breaks, even the Lord Ruler won't be able to hold it together.
There's something you're not telling us, isn't there?
Vin said, looking away from the window, turning toward Kelsier.
A part of the plan.
Kelsier glanced over at her in the darkness. Marsh's chosen meeting place was an abandoned building within the Twists, one of the most impoverished ska slums. Kelsier had located a second abandoned building across from the one they would meet in, and he and Vin waited on the top floor, watching the street for signs of Marsh.
Why do you ask me that? Kelsier finally said.
Because of the Lord Ruler, Vin said, picking at the rotting wood of her windowsill. I felt his power today. I don't think the others could sense it, not like a Mistborn can. But I know you must have.
She looked up again, meeting Kelsier's eyes.
You're still planning to get him out of the city before we try to take the palace, right?
Don't worry about the Lord Ruler, Kelsier said. The 11th Medal will take care of him.
Vin frowned. Outside, the sun was setting in a fiery blaze of frustration. The mists would come soon, and supposedly Marsh would arrive a short time later.
The 11th Medal, she thought, remembering the skepticism with which the other crew members regarded it. Is it real? Vin asked.
The 11th Medal? Of course it is. I showed it to you, remember?
That's not what I mean, she said. Are the legends real? Are you lying?
Kelsier turned toward her, frowning slightly. Then he smirked.
You're a very blunt girl, Vin.
I know.
Kelsier's smile deepened.
The answer is no, I'm not lying. The legends are real, though it took some time for me to find them.
And that bit of metal you showed us really is the 11th Medal?
I think so, Kelsier said.
But you don't know how to use it.
Kelsier paused, then shook his head.
No, I don't.
That's not very comforting.
Kelsier shrugged, turning to look out the window. Even if I don't discover the secret in time, I doubt the Lord Ruler will be as big a problem as you think. He's a powerful allomancer, but he doesn't know everything. If he did, we'd be dead right now. He's not omnipotent either. If he were, he wouldn't have needed to execute all of those ska to try and frighten the city into submission. I don't know what he is, but I think he's more like a man than he is a god. The words in that logbook, they're the words of a regular person.
His real power comes from his armies and his wealth. If we remove them, he won't be able to do anything to stop his empire from collapsing.
Vin frowned.
He might not be a god, but... he's something, Kelsier. Something different. Today, when he was in the square, I could feel his touch on my emotions, even when I was burning copper.
That's not possible, Vin, Kelsier said with a shake of his head. If it were, Inquisitors would be able to sense allomancy even when there was a smoker nearby. If that were the case, don't you think they'd hunt down all of the Ska Mistings and kill them?
Vin shrugged.
You know the Lord Ruler is strong, Kelsier said, and you feel like you should be able to sense him. So you do.
Maybe he's right, she thought, picking off another bit of the windowsill. He's been an allomancer far longer than I have, after all. But I felt something, didn't I? And the Inquisitor that nearly killed me, somehow he found me in the darkness and rain. He must have sensed something.
She let the matter drop, however.
The 11th metal. Can we just try it and see what it does?
It's not that simple, Kelsier said. You remember how I told you never to burn a metal that wasn't one of the 10?
Vin nodded.
Burning another metal can be deadly, Kelsier said. Even getting the wrong mixture in an alloy metal can make you sick. If I'm wrong about the 11th metal,
it will kill you,
Vin said quietly. Kelsier nodded.
So you're not quite as certain as you pretend, she decided. Otherwise, you'd have tried it by now.
That's what you want to find in the logbook, Vin said.
A clue about how to use the 11th metal.
Kelsier nodded. I'm afraid we weren't very lucky in that respect. So far, the logbook hasn't even mentioned allomancy.
Though it does talk about ferrochemy, Vin said.
Kelsier eyed her as he stood by his window, one shoulder leaning against the wall. So Sazed told you about that? Vin glanced down.
I kind of forced him to.
Kelsier chuckled. I wonder what I've unleashed upon the world by teaching you allomancy. Of course, my trainer said the same thing about me.
He was right to worry.
Of course he was. Vin smiled. Outside, the sunlight was nearly gone, and diaphanous patches of mist were beginning to form in the air. They hung like ghosts, slowly growing larger, extending their influence as night approached.
Sazed didn't have time to tell me much about ferrochemy, Vin said carefully. What kind of things can it do?
She waited in trepidation, assuming that Kelsier would see through her lie. Ferrochemy is completely internal, Kelsier said in an offhand voice. It can provide some of the same things we get from pewter and tin, strength, endurance, eyesight, but each attribute has to be stored separately. It can enhance a lot of other things, too. Things that allomancy can't do. Memory, physical speed, clarity of thought. Even some strange things, like physical weight or physical age, can be altered by ferrochemy.
So it's more powerful than allomancy? Vin said.
Kelsier shrugged. Ferrochemy doesn't have any external powers. It can't push and pull emotions. Nor can it steel push or iron pull. And the biggest limitation to ferrochemy is that you have to store up all of its abilities by drawing them from your own body. Want to be twice as strong for a time? Well, you have to spend several hours being weak to store up the strength. If you want to store up the ability to heal quickly, you have to spend a great deal of time feeling sick. In allomancy, the metals themselves are our fuel. We can generally keep going as long as we have enough metal to burn. In ferrochemy, the metals are just storage devices. Your own body is the real fuel.
So you just steal someone else's storage metals, right? Vin said.
Kelsier shook his head. Doesn't work. Ferrochemists can only access metal stores they themselves created.
Oh.
Kelsier nodded. So no, I wouldn't say that ferrochemy is more powerful than allomancy. They both have advantages and limitations. For instance, an allomancer can only flare a metal so high, and so his maximum strength is bounded.
Ferrochemists don't have that kind of limitation. If a ferrochemist had enough strength stored up to be twice as strong as normal for an hour, he could choose instead to be three times as strong for a shorter period of time, or even four, five, or six times as strong for even shorter periods. Vin frowned.
That sounds like a pretty big advantage.
True, Kelsier said, reaching inside of his cloak and pulling out a vial containing several beads of atium. But we have this. It doesn't matter if a ferrochemist is as strong as five men or as strong as 50 men. If I know what he's going to do next, I'll beat him. Vin nodded. Here, Kelsier said, unstoppering the vial and pulling out one of the beads. He took out another vial, this one filled with the normal alcohol solution, and dropped the bead in it. Take one of these. You might need it.
Tonight? Vin asked, accepting the vial.
Kelsier nodded.
But it's just Marsh.
It might be, he said. Then again, maybe the obligators caught him and forced him to write that letter. Maybe they're following him, or maybe they've since captured him and have tortured him to find out about the meeting. Marsh is in a very dangerous place. Think about trying to do the same thing you're doing at those balls, except exchange all the noblemen for obligators and inquisitors. Vin shivered.
I guess you have a point, she said, tucking away the bead of atium. You know, something must be wrong with me. I barely even stop to think how much this stuff is worth anymore.
Kelsier didn't respond immediately.
I have trouble forgetting how much it's worth, he said quietly.
Vin
trailed off, glancing down at his hands. He usually wore long-sleeved shirts and gloves now. His reputation was making it dangerous for his identifying scars to be visible in public. Vin knew they were there, however, like thousands of tiny white scratches layered one over the other. Anyway, Kelsier said, you're right about the logbook. I had hoped that it would mention the 11th medal. But allomancy isn't even mentioned in reference to Ferrochemy. The two powers are similar in many respects. You'd think that he would compare them.
Maybe he worried that someone would read the book and didn't want to give away that he was an allomancer.
Kelsier nodded. Maybe. It's also possible that he hadn't snapped yet. Whatever happened in those terrace mountains changed him from hero to tyrant. Maybe it also awakened his powers. We won't know, I guess, until Sayes finishes his translation.
Is he close?
Kelsier nodded. Just a bit left. The important bit, hopefully. I feel a little frustrated with the text so far. The Lord Ruler hasn't even told us what he is supposed to accomplish in those mountains. He claims that he's doing something to protect the entire world, but that might just be his ego coming through.
He didn't seem very egotistical in the text to me, Vin thought. Kind of the opposite, actually.
Regardless, Kelsier said. We'll know more once the last few sections are translated. It was growing dark outside, and Vin had to turn up her tin to see properly. The street outside her window grew visible, adopting the strange mixture of shadow and luminance that was the result of tin-enhanced vision. She knew it was dark, logically, yet she could still see. Not as she did in regular light, everything was muted, but it was sight nonetheless. Kelsier checked his pocket watch.
How long? Vin asked.
Another half hour, Kelsier said. Assuming he's on time, and I doubt he will be. He is my brother, after all. Vin nodded, shifting so that she leaned with arms crossed across the broken windowsill. Though it was a very small thing, she felt a comfort in having the atium Kelsier had given her. She paused. Thinking of atium reminded her of something important, something she'd been bothered by on several occasions.
You never taught me the 9th medal, she accused, turning.
Kelsier shrugged. I told you that it wasn't very important.
Still, what is it?
Some alloy of atium, I assume? Kelsier shook his head. No, the last two medals don't follow the same pattern as the basic 8. The 9th medal is gold.
Gold? Vin asked. That's it? I could have tried it a long time ago on my own.
Kelsier chuckled. Assuming you wanted to.
Burning gold is a somewhat uncomfortable experience. Vin narrowed her eyes, then turned to look back out the window. We'll see, she thought.
You're going to try it anyway, aren't you? Kelsier said, smiling. Vin didn't respond.
Kelsier sighed, reaching into his sash and pulling out a golden boxing and a file.
You should probably get one of these, he said, holding up the file. However, if you collect a metal yourself, burn just a tiny bit first to make certain that it's pure or alloyed correctly.
If it isn't? Vin asked.
You'll know, Kelsier promised, beginning to file away at the coin. Remember that headache you had from pewter dragging?
Yes.
Bad metal is worse, Kelsier said. Far worse. Buy your metals when you can. In every city you'll find a small group of merchants who provide powdered metals to allomancers. Those merchants have a vested interest in making certain that all of their metals are pure. A grumpy mistborn with a headache isn't exactly the kind of slighted customer one wants to deal with.
Kelsier finished filing, then collected a few flakes of gold on a small square of cloth.
He stuck one on a finger, then swallowed it. This is good, he said, handing her the cloth. Go ahead. Just remember, burning the ninth metal is a strange experience.
Vin nodded, suddenly feeling a bit apprehensive. You'll never know if you don't try it for yourself, she thought, then dumped the dust-like flakes into her mouth. She washed them down with a bit of water from her flask. A new metal reserve appeared within her, unfamiliar and different from the nine she knew. She looked up at Kelsier, took a breath, and burned gold. She was in two places at once. She could see herself, and she could see herself. One of her was a strange woman, changed and transformed from the girl she had always been. That girl had been careful and cautious, a girl who would never burn an unfamiliar metal based solely on the word of one man. This woman was foolish. She had forgotten many of the things that had let her survive so long. She drank from cups prepared by others. She fraternized with strangers. She didn't keep track of the people around her. She was still far more careful than most people, but she had lost so much. The other her was something she had always secretly loathed. A child, really. Thin to the point of scrawniness, she was lonely, hateful, and untrusting. She loved no one, and no one loved her. She always told herself quietly that she didn't care. Was there something worth living for? There had to be. Life couldn't be as pathetic as it seemed. Yet it had to be. There wasn't anything else. Vin was both. She stood in two places, moving both bodies, being both girl and woman. She reached out with hesitant, uncertain hands, one each, and touched herself on the faces, one each. Vin gasped, and it was gone. She felt a sudden rush of emotions, a sense of worthlessness and confusion. There were no chairs in the room, so she simply squatted to the ground, sitting with her back to the wall, knees pulled up, arms wrapped around them. Kelsier walked over, squatting down to lay a hand on her shoulder.
It's all right.
What was that? She whispered.
Gold and Atium are complements, like the other metal pairs, Kelsier said. Atium lets you see marginally into the future. Gold works in a similar way, but it lets you see into the past, or at least it gives you a glimpse of another version of yourself, had things been different in the past.
Vin shivered. The experience of being both people at once, of seeing herself twice over, had been disturbingly eerie. Her body still shook and her mind didn't feel right anymore. Fortunately, the sensation seemed to be fading.
Remind me to listen to you in the future, she said, or at least when you talk about allomancy.
Kelsier chuckled.
I tried to put it out of your mind for as long as possible, but you had to try it sometime. You'll get over it.
Vin nodded.
It's almost gone already. But it wasn't just a vision, Kelsier. It was real. I could touch her, the other me.
It may feel that way, Kelsier said, but she wasn't there. I couldn't see her, at least. It's a hallucination.
Atium visions aren't just hallucinations, Vin said. The shadows really do show what people will do.
True, Kelsier said. I don't know. Gold is strange, Vin. I don't think anybody understands it. My trainer Gemmel said that a gold shadow was a person who didn't exist, but could have. A person you might have become had you not made certain choices. Of course, Gemmel was a bit screwy, so I'm not sure how much I'd believe of what he said. Vin nodded. However, it was unlikely that she'd find out more about gold anytime soon. She didn't intend to ever burn it again, if she could help it. She continued to sit, letting her emotions recover for a while, and Kelsier moved back over by the window. Eventually, he perked up.
"He's here?"
Vin asked, crawling to her feet. Kelsier nodded. "You want to stay here and rest some more?" Vin shook her head. "All right, then," he said, placing his pocket watch, file, and other medals on the windowsill. "Let's go." They didn't go out the window. Kelsier wanted to maintain a low profile, though this section of the twists was so deserted that Vin wasn't sure why he bothered. They left the building, via a set of untrustworthy stairs, then crossed the street in silence. The building Marsh had chosen was even more run down than the one Vin and Kelsier had been sitting in. The front door was gone, though Vin could see remnants of it, in the splintered refuse on the floor. The room inside smelled of dust and soot, and she had to stifle a sneeze. A figure standing on the far side of the room spun at the sound.
"Kel?"
"It's me," Kelsier said. "And Vin." As Vin drew closer, she could see Marsh squinting in the darkness. It was odd to watch him, feeling like she was in plain sight, yet knowing that to him she and Kelsier were nothing more than shadows. The far wall of the building had collapsed, and mist floated freely in the room, nearly as dense as it was outside.
"You have ministry tattoos," Vin said, staring at Marsh.
"Of course," Marsh said, his voice as stern as ever. "I had them put on before I met up with the caravan. I had to have them to play the part of an acolyte." They weren't extensive. He was playing a low-ranked obligator, but the pattern was unmistakable. Dark lines rimming the eyes, running outward like crawling cracks of lightning. There was one single line, much thicker and in bright red, running down the side of his face. Vin recognized the pattern. These were the lines of an obligator who belonged to the Canton of Inquisition. Marsh hadn't just infiltrated the ministry, he'd chosen the most dangerous section of it to infiltrate.
"But you'll always have them," Vin said. "They're so distinctive. Everywhere you go, you'll be known as either an obligator or a fraud."
"That was part of the price he paid to infiltrate the ministry, Vin," Kelsier said quietly.
"It doesn't matter," Marsh said. "I didn't have much of a life before this anyway. Look, can we hurry? I'm expected to be somewhere soon. Obligators lead busy lives, and I only have a few minutes leeway."
"All right," Kelsier said. "I assume your infiltration went well, then?"
"It went fine," Marsh said tersely. "Too well, actually. I think I might have distinguished myself from the group. I assumed that I would be at a disadvantage, since I didn't have the same 5 years of training that the other acolytes did. I made certain to answer questions as thoroughly as possible, and to perform my duties with precision. However, I apparently know more about the ministry than even some of its members do. I'm certainly more competent than this batch of newcomers, and the Prelans have noticed that."
Kelsier chuckled. "You always were an overachiever." Marsh snorted quietly.
"Anyway, my knowledge, not to mention my skill as a seeker, has already earned me an outstanding reputation. I'm not sure how closely I want the Prelans paying attention to me. That background we devised begins to sound a bit flimsy when an Inquisitor is grilling you."
Vin frowned.
"You told them you're a Misting?"
"Of course I did," Marsh said. "The Ministry, particularly the Canton of Inquisition, recruits noblemen seekers diligently. The fact that I'm one is enough to keep them from asking too many questions about my background. They're happy enough to have me, despite the fact that I'm a fair bit older than most acolytes."
"Besides," Kelsier said,
He needed to tell them he was a Misting so that he could get into the more secretive ministry sects. Most of the higher-ranking obligators are Mistings of one sort or another. They tend to favor their own kind.
With good reason, Marsh said, speaking quickly. Kell, the ministry is far more competent than we assumed.
What do you mean?
They make use of their Mistings, Marsh said. Good use of them. They have bases throughout the city. Soothing stations, as they call them. Each one contains a couple of ministry soothers, whose only duty is to extend a dampening influence around them, calming and depressing the emotions of everyone in the area.
Kelsier hissed quietly.
How many?
Dozens, Marsh said.
Concentrated in Ska sections of the city. They know that the Ska are beaten, but they want to make sure things stay that way.
Bloody hell, Kelsier said. I always thought that the Ska inside Luthadel seemed more beaten down than others. No wonder we had so much trouble recruiting. The people's emotions are under a constant soothing.
Marsh nodded. The ministry soothers are good, Kel. Very good. Even better than Breeze. All they do is soothe all day, every day. And since they're not trying to get you to do anything specific, instead just keeping you from extreme emotional ranges, they're very hard to notice. Each team has a smoker to keep them hidden, as well as a seeker to watch for passing allomancers. I'll bet this is where the Inquisitors got a lot of their leads. Most of our people are smart enough not to burn when they know that there's an obligator in the area, but they're more lax in the slums.
Can you get us a list of the stations? Kelsier asked. We need to know where those seekers are, Marsh.
Marsh nodded. I'll try. I'm on my way to a station right now. They always do personnel changes at night to maintain their secret. The upper ranks have taken an interest in me, and they're letting me visit some stations to become familiar with their work. I'll see if I can get a list for you.
Kelsier nodded in the darkness.
Just don't be stupid with the information, all right? Marsh said. We have to be careful, Kel. The ministry has kept these stations secret for quite some time. Now that we know about them, we have a serious advantage. Don't waste it.
I won't, Kelsier promised. What about the Inquisitors? Did you find anything out about them?
Marsh stood quietly for a moment. They're strange, Kel. I don't know. They seem to have all of the allomantic powers, so I assume that they were once Mistborn. I can't find out much else about them, though I do know that they age.
Really? Kelsier said with interest.
So they're not immortal?
No, Marsh said.
The obligators say that Inquisitors change occasionally. The creatures are very long-lived, but they do eventually die of old age. New ones must be recruited from nobleman ranks. They're people, Kel. They've just been changed.
Kelsier nodded.
If they can die of old age, then there's probably other ways to kill them, too. That's what I think, Marsh said. I'll see what I can find, but don't get your hopes up. The Inquisitors don't have many dealings with normal obligators. There's political tension between the two groups. The Lord Prelin leads the church, but the Inquisitors think that they should be in charge.
Interesting, Kelsier said slowly. Vin could practically hear his mind working on the new information.
Anyway, I should go, Marsh said. I had to jog all the way here, and I'm going to be late getting to my appointment anyway.
Kelsier nodded, and Marsh began to move away, picking his way over the rubble in his dark obligator's robe.
Marsh, Kelsier said as Marsh reached the doorway.
Marsh turned.
Thank you, Kelsier said. I can only guess how dangerous this is. I'm not doing this work for you, Kel, Marsh said. But I appreciate the sentiment. I'll try and send you another missive once I have more information.
Be careful, Kelsier said.
Marsh vanished out into the misty night.
Kelsier stood in the fallen room for a few minutes, staring after his brother.
He wasn't lying about that, either, Vin thought. He really does care for Marsh.
Let's go, Kelsier said. We should get you back to Mansion Renu. House Lee Cal is throwing another party in a few days, and you'll need to be there.
Sometimes my companions claim that I worry and question too much. However, while I may wonder about my stature as the hero, there is one thing that I have never questioned. the ultimate good of our quest. The deepness must be destroyed. I have seen it, and I have felt it. This name we give it is too weak a word, I think. Yet it is deep and unfathomable, but it is also terrible. Many do not realize that it is sentient, but I have sensed its mind, such that it is, the few times that I have confronted it directly. It is a thing of destruction, madness, and corruption. It would destroy this world not out of spite or out of animosity, but simply because that is what it does. 28. Keep Lical's ballroom was shaped like the inside of a pyramid. The dance floor was set on a waist-high platform at the very center of the room, and the dining tables sat on four similar platforms surrounding it. Servants scuttled through the trenches, running between the platforms, delivering food to the dining aristocrats. Four tiers of balconies ran along the inside perimeter of the pyramidal room, each one a little closer to the point at the top, each one extending just a little bit more over the dance floor. Though the main room was well lit, the balconies themselves were shadowed by their overhangs. The design was intended to allow proper viewing of the keep's most distinctive artistic feature, the small stained-glass windows that lined each balcony. Lical noblemen bragged that while other keeps had larger windows, Keep Lical had the most detailed ones. Vin had to admit that they were impressive. She'd seen so many stained-glass windows over the last few months that she was beginning to take them for granted. Keep Lical's windows, however, put most of them to shame. Each of these was an extravagant, detailed marvel of resplendent color. Exotic animals pranced, distant landscapes enticed, and portraits of famous noblemen sat proudly. There were also, of course, the requisite pictures dedicated to the Ascension. Vin could recognize these more easily now, and she was surprised to see references to things she had read in the logbook. The hills of emerald green, the steep mountains with faint wave-like lines coming from the tips, a deep, dark lake, and blackness. The deepness, a chaotic thing of destruction. He defeated it, Vin thought. But what was it? Perhaps the end of the logbook would reveal more. Vin shook her head, leaving the alcove and its black window behind. She strolled along the second balcony, wearing a pure white gown, an outfit she would never have been able to even imagine during her life as a ska. Ash and soot had been too much a part of her life, and she didn't think she'd even had a concept of what a pristine white looked like. That knowledge made the dress even more wondrous to her. She hoped she would never lose that, the sense within herself of how life had been before. It made her appreciate what she had so much more than the real nobility seemed to. She continued along the balcony, seeking her prey. Glittering colors shone from backlit windows, sparkling light across the floor. Most of the windows glowed inside small viewing alcoves along the balcony, and so the balcony before her was interspersed with pockets of dark and color. Vin didn't stop to study any more of the windows. She'd done quite a bit of that during her first balls at Keep Lical. This night she had business to attend to. She found her quarry halfway down the east balcony walkway. Lady Cliss was speaking with a group of people, so Vin paused, pretending to study a window. Cliss's group soon broke up. One could generally only take so much of Cliss at a time. The short woman began to walk along the balcony toward Vin. When she drew close, Vin turned as if in surprise.
"Why, Lady Cliss, I haven't seen you all evening."
Cliss turned eagerly, obviously excited by the prospect of another person with whom to gossip.
"Lady Villette," she said, waddling forward, "you missed Lord Cabe's ball last week. Not due to a relapse of your earlier malady, I hope?"
"No," Vin said. "I spent that evening dining with my uncle."
"Oh,"
Cliss said, disappointed. A relapse would have made a better story.
"Well, that's good. I hear you have some interesting news about Lady Trenpedry de Luce," Vin said carefully. "I myself have heard some interesting things lately."
She eyed Cliss, implying that she'd be willing to trade tidbits.
"Oh, that," Cliss said eagerly. "Well, I heard that Tren Pedri isn't at all interested in a union with House Aim, though her father is implying that there will be a wedding soon. You know how the Aim sons are, though. Why, Fedrin is an absolute buffoon."
Inwardly, Vin rolled her eyes. Cliss just kept on talking, not even noticing that Vin had something she herself wanted to share.
"Using subtlety on this woman is about as effective as trying to sell bathwater perfumes to a plantation ska." "That is interesting," Vin said, interrupting Cliss. "Perhaps Tren Pedri's hesitance comes because of House Aim's connection to House Hastings."
Cliss paused.
"Why would that be?" "Well, we all know what House Hastings is planning." "We do?" Cliss asked.
Vin pretended to look embarrassed.
"Oh, perhaps that isn't known yet. Please, Lady Cliss, forget that I said anything." "Forget?" Cliss said. "Why, it's already forgotten. But come now, you can't just stop. What do you mean?" "I shouldn't say," Vin said. "It's just something I overheard my uncle talking about." "Your uncle?" Cliss asked, growing more eager. "What did he say? You know that you can trust me." "Well," Vin said, "he said that House Hastings was relocating a lot of resources back to its plantations in the Southern Dominance. My uncle was quite happy. Hastings has withdrawn from some of its contracts, and my uncle was hoping to get them instead." "Relocating," Cliss said. "Why, they wouldn't do that unless they were planning to withdraw from the city."
"Could you blame them?" Vin asked quietly. "I mean, who wants to risk what happened to House Tikiel?"
"Who indeed?" Cliss said.
She was practically shaking with eagerness to go share the news.
"Anyway, please, this is obviously only hearsay," Vin said. "You probably shouldn't tell anyone about it." "Of course," Cliss said. Excuse me, I need to go refresh myself."
"Of course," Vin said, watching the woman zip away toward the balcony stairs. Vin smiled. House Hastings was making no such preparations, of course. Hastings was one of the strongest families in the city, and wouldn't likely withdraw. However, Doxson was back at the shop forging documents which, when delivered to the right places, would imply that Hastings was planning to do what Vin had said.